But you're raiding the goal.
How do goals happen?
Flirt.
And then you score.
Live every weekday morning from 7:30 on your smart speaker. Just ask Alexa to play OTB Sports Radio.
OTB's The Hurling Pod.
With Bord Gáis Energy.
Proud sponsors of the Senior Hurling Championship.
We're on the eve of the championship, which you've been waiting for. It feels like every single podcast that we've done in the last while was trying to just reel ourselves back in ever so slightly and not go, let's talk about Clare and Limerick in the first round, because that's all we've wanted to do for ages. We did grading on the OTB members pod there at the tail end of the week. Every single one was like, yeah, but the first two, no, don't talk about championship. Let's just talk about the league. Let's not go too far. And here we are now, where we can let all of our best material about the championship come out. Delighted to say Paul Murphy is here. Paul, how are you getting on?
Good, lads. How are you?
James Scale is here. Galway have qualified for the semi-finals of the Leinster Under 20 since we spoke last a couple of weeks ago. He must be a happy man.
I'm content. I won't say happy though. I can't give too much away, Will. But I'm happier this week. I'm happier this week than I was this time last week, I will say. I'll admit that.
I'd imagine, yeah. Like, I mean, you're happy to admit that you didn't know the port was alcoholic and you thought it was just a straight up mixer and that you were having port and whiskies after the All-Ireland final in 17. Like, that's much more of a revelation than, you know what, actually we were really happy with the way we performed against Dublin at the weekend and it's great to go directly to a semi-final. I ask you anything about this and it's Johnny Tightlips and the walls just go up.
Yeah, that is true. Well, in fairness, like they do say, if you can't laugh at yourself, who can you laugh at? And I have no problem laughing at myself from time to time. So the fact that I did reveal that I didn't know the port was alcohol, I'm okay with that. You know, whatever people say to me, I get the same reaction every time, so nothing surprises me. What? Like, you thought port was a mixer? Yeah, yeah. So what? Like, I learned. Move on. I haven't drank it since. So I think it was a valuable lesson, actually. If I look back, you know, that was a sign of growth. Valuable lesson. I haven't touched it since.
Exactly. I mean, you win or you learn, as they say. And in this case, you definitely learned. The other thing that made you really happy, and I forgot to click the video on the members pod, so I'm not going to deny the viewers and the listeners a chance. Well, particularly the viewers in this case. Here is Podge the Calf in all his glory.
Lovely, isn't it? Literally out of the box. But literally born. Yeah, you just did say it, yeah. Literally born, yeah, as you can see. It's been kind of the last fortnight, maybe 18 days has been fairly hectic. Sleep is hard to come by, as you can probably tell from my complexion right now, baggy eyes. As my mother says to me before I come on, just put some water on your face, you look terrible. Thanks, ma'am. I appreciate the honesty, which you'll get. Always from the mother is brutal honesty. But Jack Cavan's season is well and truly ongoing.
Yeah, I was going to say, so you were pitching to do a farming podcast, so indulge me for a moment when I say, when I hear the phrase calving season, because I'm not from an agricultural background, so yeah. I'm going to admit this and say, is calving season a thing, and how long does calving season actually go on for?
Well, it is, like, so it depends on the size of your herd. So, like, I have 20 cows, so I do pedigree Charlies, and I do some commercial cattle, like the one you saw there, and, excuse me. I try to aim it, like, say, for the first week in April to the kind of the end of April, and then get them out on the grass. Unfortunately, the weather hasn't been good. So what happens is you've got a block there about 3 weeks where it's just go time. And it could be 3 a.m, 3 p.m. You just don't know what to be. And then some are easier than others. So Podge, fair play to him, came out by himself, no assistance required. Whereas the one last night decided, no, I need you for 2 hours, James. I need your assistance for 2 hours. So at a very bad time. So ultimately, that's the joys of farming.
And assistance then would be you effectively in the doctor role here, pulling the calf out. Is that what assistance means?
Assistance is stage one, trying to let her off if she can do it herself, which is always the best way possible. So when things get a bit serious, you intervene, get her up, put your hand in, try to pull out. If there's no go or the calf is quite sized, get that implement called the jack. And the jack is not an implement or an apparatus to be messed with. So once you're going for the jack, you better be sure like this is going to work, because you can make a terrible mistake. And I have in the past, I won't lie, whereby the jack's not going to work. She just won't come out. And ultimately, you're in big shit then.
Jesus.
Yeah, if that has. It's only ever happened to me once, but once is enough to learn about 6 years ago where I went for the jack. Calf was oversized.
Yeah.
So the calf can't come out naturally with the jack or nothing, and then it's caught.
Whoa.
So what happens is the calves get out, it comes out head first, which is the best way to come out, and then it gets caught at the hips, and no matter what you do, you can't get it out.
Oh.
So then the calf dies, ultimately, because it has no oxygen, because it's compressed, And then the cow, lucky just the cow survived. But that was a very, very steep learning curve.
Jesus.
That's the kind of decision. And that's kind of the panic. Well, I won't say panic. It's called a pressure. Pressure involved from Kevin. So that's why there's a huge array of excitement when one comes out and gets up straight away like Podge.
Okay.
Jesus. Yeah, sure. Hey, I understand that.
Yeah, look, it's a lot brighter when you look at Podge there in all of his glory. Named after Podge Collins, who was with us for the live podcast last week, just in case people are wondering why there's Podge the calf. But there he is. I assume, what, we 7-8 days on, he's doing all right, is he?
100%. Leaping and jumping another place. So good that I've actually seen him in different pens that he shouldn't be in. So he's obviously coming out through the barriers, going for a stroll and then hopping in again. Hey, look, he's as Murphy said, he's full of vigour. Is that what you said?
I can't remember. Yeah, something like that.
He's full of vigour. And this lad is full of vigour, yeah. Like, he's the type of calf you nearly run over on the tractor because he's right behind you. He didn't even... It's the way I want. And might I just say, in about maybe 10 months' time, for sale... Yep. For sale, if anyone wants one. Murphy, if you want to start a new enterprise, you know?
Ah, the back garden isn't big enough here, so I don't think for 10-month-old.
Can you imagine? I got a new pet, 80. Oh, what'd you get, puppy? No.
I had to buy him.
And then a bull calf out the back.
Well, there you are. Aideen has bought it. Aideen has a heifer.
Oh, really?
Her dad has a small farm, and she decided, you know what? I'm going to buy a heifer. So, yeah. So... Bullock, sorry, she shouted at me here. Sorry, just to confirm, you weren't calling me anything else. It was Bullock you said. Bullock. So Bullock, sorry.
It's a bit like the Oxford Debating Society here, where points of information are being shouted out from the kitchen. But
yeah, well, like she got one. Her dad, Joe would each year, maybe it's about 30 or so. Give me the terminology here. I don't want to say anything because the farmers are jumping me back here now. He rares.
Yeah, exactly. There you go.
So Aideen was like, yeah, listen, I'm going to buy one. So she bought one. We went down and had a look at it there a few months ago, and they're all looking in and said, which one is it, Joe? And he goes, well, look into the back there, and there's one spare lad standing at the back, just vacant, nothing going on. He was just said, that's your lad. I was like, ah, shiz, I don't know what I wanted, but he looks like the thickest of all these cows. Not that we're entering into a pub quiz or anything anytime soon, but I was like, why does he give the impression that he's not a good one to have? But he's doing well. We'll get you a picture for the next one, Will, anyway, so you can compare.
Well, Murph, by cancellation, Murph, I thought I give Grace one as well, you know.
Yeah.
So I thought Grace knew fucking nothing the first time she came to the establishment, right?
Yeah.
And I said, pick any one of these. And I thought she'd go for colour. And I said, that looked nice, you know what I mean? And I declare to God, she picked out my best one.
Go away.
I was sick. I said, oh gosh. And now I have to stick with it now. I can't back out now. I have to give it to her. Best cow I have is hers. So nothing I can do. And she likes to gently remind me each week or each month, I say. But yeah, so I think you're winning there, man. So if Aideen wants another one, quality.
She might be open to investment. We'll see what the first one goes.
Yeah, and I won't see you wrong.
Yeah, we probably won't go up to Capitagal to
I deliver.
We're going to have to take, okay.
I just want a reason to come down south, right? So, or southeast and just go for 2 days.
Have to deliver cows. It's
going
to be 2 days.
If I say I'm going on business, my probability of getting out the door goes up, way up.
One last calving question for you before we get into the hurling. When you say that you kind of time things for April, how exactly do you time the fact that they conceive at a certain time and so on? How do you do that?
So I do two methods. So for all the pedigree animals, I do AI, artificial insemination.
Okay.
So you can choose the time you give them the straw, it's called. So then the gestation period then is 283 days after that, generally. So, for example, now if I want to calve in, as I said, mid-April, I just work back 283 days roughly. So you're heading kind of into June, July country time. So that's when they'll all conceive again, hopefully.
Okay.
And then the rest of them, I'd release a bull out something for the rest of them around that time. The worst thing you have is you don't want them calving at grass because they get fat. And if they get fat, big calves are very hard to come out, if you know what I mean. Yeah. At least when they're indoors, you can actually control their diet and limit how much they intake so they don't get too large.
Jesus, right.
So you're controlling them. So, but the pedigree ones are tricky because they're much, much bigger animals and much more high value. So much more pressure and nervousness.
Jesus.
But so far, so good.
Well, you can't say this podcast isn't educational. There you go. That's calving season explained and told to us by James Kell. But Paul Murphy wouldn't assist as a family.
It's very, yeah.
You know. A family interest in bovine. So yeah, there you go. It is the Hurling Pod, though, with thanks to Borgas Energy. They are the proud sponsors of the All-Ireland Senior Hurling Championship. As much as Skella wants to drag this into the direction of farming every single week, I promise this is just a little bit of a tangent before we get going. It's finally here, though, lads. We did our grading. Not everyone agreed. I don't think any of us agreed by the end of it on our grading at the end of the league, because foolishly, as I look down at my notebook, which is still open here, we kind of changed our methodology halfway through. But...
No, you did. You did.
Okay, fine.
Let's just get it clear, right?
But you agreed. You agreed at the end. So by de facto, then you did also.
By de facto?
Yeah.
Jesus. Now I'm down in the mud with you guys. Oh,
God. you were given a final call in the end. Will said, are you all happy? And you went, what did you say? You're content. You said you were content. Well,
as a man with three small children, right? All I want is peace. That's all I want is peace, okay? So when I'm offered a sign of peace, I'll take it, Murph.
I think there was part of him at that stage you went, you know what, day two at the Masters, I wouldn't mind seeing a few shots before I go to bed, so let's not argue over whether Westmeath or C or Waterford or D or wherever we got at that point. But here is the state of play, and if you want to listen to the argumentation around all this, you can listen to the members pod, offtheball.com/join. You can pick up that pod and all the pods as part of it. But we had settled on Clare A+. Limerick, B+. Tipperary, C. Kilkenny, B+. Galway, B+. Even though I think there was an argument around whether it should be plus or not. We agreed that Wexford were a B-. Cork were a B-. Waterford were an E, because I split the difference between the two boys who had a D and an F. Antrim, we gave a D. Dublin, we gave a D. And Westmeath and Offaly both got Cs. So that just goes to show where we think the teams are coming relative to their league expectation, I think, is the fairest way to put the gradings there. But now here we are in Championship. To what extent, lads, before we dig into the games themselves, and Murphy, you can come first on this, if you're a team, can you just put the league that you've had behind you and just reset for Championship? Or because there's only a few weeks in between, are they quite linked now at this point?
Yeah, they're naturally quite linked. It's very hard to put everything behind you. Like, there will be some aspects for some teams where they'll go... There'll be traits of their game, there'll be things they've done, and they'll just go, ah, look, we can park that and we can move on. But there may be, like, generally with these things, you're wondering, will some of the negative things that teams displayed, some of the traits they did, some of the games they had, will that follow them into Championship? All the teams that will have a few positives, particularly like Clare, and you know, maybe other teams will identify positives that they had, they'll try and bring those forward. Of course, you're always going to try and bring the positives. But I think, look, if you're to pick an example, we're entering into Championship now. Tipperary fans will be looking at Tip going, okay, that performance against Clare in the semi-final of the league, are we going to come in to the Championship like that? Or are we going to, you know, put that to one side? Will there still be cracks, you know, displayed when we face Limerick in a few weeks' time? Or will it be a case that, you know, it was a once-off game, Liam Cahill is after getting everybody back on track, we're in a good place, and move on. So, like, each team will look at it that way. Like, I mean, Cork will look at it from the point of view, slow start to the league, will they have a slow start to the Championship to go? You know, that's where they'll focus on. So each team will have their own ones. But it's very hard for any team to, because it's been so close to the league, just completely draw a line under all their performances and everything they displayed. They're naturally going to carry things forward. And I think individually for players, you know, if some players had a bit of a shaky league, very little time to, I suppose, reverse that, get the confidence going. There is time. You know, you can get a few good training sessions under your belt. You can make peace with some of the games you had. But, you know, it's coming back to your question, it's such a close period that essentially this is, you know, stepping from the league, you're not getting much of a rehab, you're just straight into Championship and on you go. So it'll be interesting to see the big one for each game. It'll be interesting to see where we left each team off in the league. Will we see a small bit of a change? Will we see a positive step forward? Or will any teams actually regress from anything they displayed in the league?
What do you reckon, Skell?
I agree. Like, it's very hard to fix any wrongs in a very short space of time. Because like, whatever is going on at the minute, like, obviously between league and Championship, there's probably a window there to fix some injuries and fix some minor detailing. But if there's any big flaws in your game or any big flaws in the way you've patternised your team set up, it's very hard to get that right. You could say perfectly right from the start of the Championship. And we've often said that the Leinster teams, in fairness, they have more of a I suppose they've more of an allowance, if you like, to improve as their championship goes on. Whereas Munster, they just don't.
It's just wiggle room in Leinster, isn't it? Like, that's not hitting out on anyone, but the fact that you are going to play Antrim and Carlow, who you'd be expected to beat if you're one of the top teams, because you're not bouncing off another All-Ireland contender week on week, naturally you can probably feel your way into it to a certain extent.
You can feel your way into it, and you can gather a bit of momentum. Like, you I suppose, from if you take Galway Kilkenny's perspective, they can just park the league and they can wind down a touch, and then they can try to nearly, I suppose, for a better term, they can time it nicely. You know, I suppose Kilkenny's is front loaded the first couple of weeks with them, week two and week three. Everyone knows their position, if you like, after week three, because that's when a lot of the heavy games are played. Munster just don't have that opportunity. Like, I suppose where I'm trying with, in my head, I'm thinking, like, is the bye a good thing? You know, last year, let's say we had Cork was the bye last year, wasn't it? It was Limerick, Waterford and Tipperary. Isn't that right? Cork had the bye and they didn't qualify.
In the first round, Cork had the bye.
So they had the bye. Tip came out hot last year, off memory. I think they struck something like 4 or 5 goals against Clare and Innes, and then they followed up with 2 draws. So everything was in the, so they got going early and then managed a big win, and it set them off, if you know what I mean. Whereas I'm looking at it, and at Cork were kind of, they stuttered a bit last year, if you like, you know. And I'm thinking now, is that the best thing for Tipperary after their league show, you know, against Clare? And the answer I'm coming up with is no, it's not. Like, I suppose if you had a bad performance as a player, the first thing you want is to get out straight away again in very quick succession. You want to get out within a week or 2 weeks or whatever it is. And Tip now have had a gap. And what they'll be seeing now is 2 sets of games that have, you know, they're hot and heavy.
Yeah.
And now they're coming up against a team. And you can try to convince yourself you're fresh, which you should be. But you're coming up against a team who's had the benefit of a heavy championship match. That's tough. That's very, very tough to get after this. And who's the first team to play? The Limerick lads. away. So that's a very tricky proposition. So I'm looking at them. So when we're talking about who's coming out of Munster, this is what's going in our thought process, you know?
Yeah.
Like, it's going to be very hard for Tip to exit. Like, granted, they have their away games are early. It's Tip are playing Limerick and Waterford away, and then they've Cork and Clare to finish. So they could finish in a flurry, but they could finish too late. Like, they came into the last round last year unbeaten and didn't qualify. You know, which is mad to think when you think about it. I think that everyone was in Tipperary was talking about the potential of Munster final last year, and that didn't transpire. Mm. So this Munster championship is no time. There's no time for anyone to falter to any degree. And like, if you look at like Limerick last year, their score count was like +2 at the end of the championship, and they just got through. Whereas the year previous it was +21 or +22, something like that. So the gap has closed significantly. So that's why this Munster championship is probably the most hotly anticipated for. In recent memory, I can't think of any other time when it was more eagerly awaited, especially the first round clash.
Yeah, like for the preparations, Murph, it is interesting. So Tip, I think, have played some McDonagh Cup teams over the last couple of weeks after the disappointment of that defeat against Clare. Their training camp, while a lot of teams are back from the training camp at this stage, I believe Tip are going away the week coming. So they've had to alter everything by a little bit compared to the teams who are getting ready to go out in Championship Week 1. Now, the thing is, if you time it properly, and if Liam Cahill has them coming perfectly into that Limerick game, you'll say maybe the gap was no harm. But to me, everything felt like it was set up for Tip to win that semi-final, go to a league final, and then they have the extra week of recovery time built in, almost baked in there.
Yeah, it was made for them to have a seriously good tilt, which was surprising when you actually saw the Clare-Tipperary game, that Clare were the ones who looked like that they had far more intent going into that game, and as if Clare were the ones that had a bye in the first round. So, like, if you look at Tip now, and look, I suppose we've just drawn our attention to them at the moment. Like, Tip have a tricky start to it. Not to say that if they played Limerick at any other time, it would be any easier. But for example, people are saying that if Limerick are to be beaten, it's most likely to be in Munster. That's the time that they might catch them, when there's matches on the go, when, you know, maybe an injury or two are picked up and you might just catch them unawares. But they're going to play a Limerick team that are either one of three options, you know, are after getting beaten by Clare. So they're coming out the back of it, really smart and really hungry, looking to tear someone apart, Tipperary, or draw or a win. So, like, or let's say we put the draw in the same category as the loss. So, like, let's say they're saying we're not happy, we didn't get the win. So they're coming out really strong. If they beat Clare, you know, I think it's a return then to the confidence of the Limerick team that we saw pre-semi-final against Kilkenny, or just maybe back to last year. Very confident team. So either way, it's a tough place for Tipperary. Whereas, let's say if you played Tipperary maybe in the third or fourth game, they'd maybe you know, faltered a small bit. They maybe had a little bit of a stutter start to it. Maybe there's potential there. But Tipperary coming off the back of the Clare game where it wouldn't have done a lot for their confidence. They have time to recoup. They have time to prepare for Limerick. But they don't really have an ambush on Limerick as far as I can see. It's a case that because the Clare match is so big for Limerick, if they don't win it, they come out of it really hurting and knowing that they have to do business for the rest of the Munster Championship. Whereas if they come out and they win, we know what Limerick are like when they're confident and when they have the backs up as well. So it's a tough situation for Tipperary. And it's interesting that Skehill said it, you know, comparing it back to Cork last year. I think a lot of teams would just rather start this week, get in with everyone else and not watch everybody else play. And, you know, you just get thrown into it. You don't have to overthink it. You don't have to think, you're just into the matches and off you go. So it may suit other teams. Different years, like if you won the league final, it may suit you to actually go, listen, we've won the league final, we've silverware on the table, we can afford to take the bye week the first week. But I think for every other team, you just want to go, if every team is starting this weekend, we want to play. So look, it's by no means is it a decider for you, but it's certainly a factor that plays into your preparation and potentially may play into how you react the first day you go out.
Yeah, so just to confirm Tipperary's schedule as Skell outlined. So on the 28th of April, of course, we talk about the team who's not playing week one is the natural way to start in the hurling podcast. Tipperary go to Limerick on the 28th of April. Then they play again on May the 4th, which is Welsh Park away to Waterford. Then they won't play on the weekend following, which is Cork and Limerick playing at Páirc Uí Chaoimh. But then Tip have got 2 weeks in a row to finish. So it's 2 weeks to break, 2 weeks is the way it works for Tip effectively. So they take on Cork at Semple Stadium and then they've got Clare at Semple Stadium on the 26th. So they'll be the 19th and 26th, so 7 days between each. So that's Tipperary's run. So that's where Tipperary are at. And look, I suppose, Skell, you were honest in your assessment of Tipperary when we were looking at them for the gradings, and this is something that's going to be an issue for the Community Championship. You're not 100% sure about them having their defence locked down as of now.
No, I'm not. There's been a couple of things with Tip over probably the last 2 years. There's been a lot of interchange with their goalies. If you remember the two Hogans, so like there's been a bit of chopping and changing, and even in the middle of the championship, so that's liable to happen again.
Who would you start in goal, Skell, if you were a
tough question? I knew you'd ask me that. I'd probably go with Hogan, to be honest.
Okay.
Just solely down to experience, that's all I'm saying. And like the experience is minor in terms of the gap, you know, but I'd probably go with Hogan.
Because Liam Cowell seems to favour Rhys Shelley, would be my thing.
No, he favours Shelley because of his striking ability. Yeah. If I'm just doing a broad assessment from looking at the two of them behind the television screen, it looks to me that Shelley has got more in his locker in terms of striking. But sometimes I can see his teams that get kind of caught up in that, you know. But really and truly, I always say about the goalkeeper, the first job is stop the ball. Stop the ball. You might get 3 or 4 points off your puck house because of lovely strikes to different areas, but stop the ball first. And I just think Hogan's just a better all-round keeper. So that's why I think he'll probably get the nod. Wait and see now, 2 weeks' time, he'll turn around, Shelley being goals. Wait and see. So, yeah, don't you know? Well, it'll be my luck. Look, just defensively as a whole, let's say, we spoke about, let's say, Tipperary's losses, but I just don't see the personnel there to provide a top-level defence. You know, if you're always looking at someone to come in, you're saying, right, if I take Clare as an example, right, who's the newest kid in the block there? Adam Hogan was the newest kid in the block. You'll say, right, can that man mark, you know, Patrick Horgan? Can he mark Conor Whelan? Can he mark, you know, Owen Cody? And the answer is yes. You know, it's emphatic, yeah. And so that when new people come into teams, I ask them certain questions. I'm looking at Tipperary's team and in the back, so I'm saying, they just don't do it for me. And whereas in previous years, they had the firepower up front to try, whatever we conceded, we'll score more. I won't say attractive, but they had the riches to do so. Whereas now I just don't see it. They still have great forwards. I'd say from 8 up to 15, and even with a couple of guys coming in the forwards, I'd be happy enough. But, I just don't see it. Like, Ronan Maher, I thought would need to come out further in the field and command it, because I was just so disappointed with the first 8 or 10 minutes of the Clare game that it asked serious questions. That there was no one took hold of it. Like, I know Amara's young. You know what I mean? I'm not going to bash any young legends. I know Barrett's come back. I get all that. But it just, I haven't seen it as of yet. Now, we could be proven all wrong, but ultimately, they've worked through, if you ask me.
Okay. Well, a few weeks ago, we said we thought they weren't going to get out. I will ask you again for a revised Munster and Leinster qualification picture at the end of this chat. But
well, Murph did say before we came on that they haven't an notion of getting out.
Did that happen, Skelly? Did that happen?
Yes, it did.
I think that might be the first time an outright lie has been told.
Outright, like a grenade thrown into the middle of the whole thing there, out of nowhere. Needless. been a great chat so far. And you're like, do you know what?
I'm going to think about divorce as well.
Yeah.
Nice. I don't think that no one said that not an ocean in case someone tries to clip that, by the way. Right. Let's get into the main event. This is the one we've been looking forward to since it was drawn. Clare versus Limerick. Last couple of great Munster finals. Last year, Clare beat them. The capacity has gone up for Ennis. That's the good news as well. There's probably going to be a few extra tickets around.
Did we figure that out, how the capacity went up? Is it just pure excitement or what are they? Is there going to be lads standing on the sideline or standing on the roof of the stand? What's the story?
Paper scissors lifts and boom towers outside.
Furry pickers can't be rented at all in Ennis. They're all sold out at the moment.
Scaffolding.
My source on this are comments from the chairman of Clare GA, who's Kieran Keating, to the Clare Echo, who confirmed their report from last week that the capacity has been increased to 20,100. It was after a safety check took place last week. And subsequently now it means the clubs are going to get an extra allocation. It's predicted that 700 to 800 tickets are going to be distributed among Clare's clubs in the next few days. So that was on Friday when that report went up. So I would think there are probably some Clare listeners who got their hands on tickets that they weren't expecting on the weekend just gone by. So they had an inspection to determine what the capacity was. Originally it was 18,000. Then it was decided that the capacity could be increased to just over 20,000. So there's a couple of thousand extra tickets there, but 900 went out to the clubs in Clare. So I'm assuming the others have gone the other side of the county border and have gone to Limerick. So there's going to be a huge crowd in from both.
What's the chances of the three of us going up?
Well, you're going on, yeah?
I am only 45 minutes away from Innes, so it's different kettle of fish for you, Murph.
But in what way?
And there's a bit further for you, further field. So I'm trying to be considerate of you, your time and effort.
Yeah. I wasn't asked. I'm going to watch it on telly. That's pretty much my plan.
Would it be nice, I think, the three of us, a little rendezvous?
It would be nice. I wouldn't take from a Clare Limerick supporter getting in by getting a ticket. I wouldn't do it in such a small capacity.
Going into the press box now, you wouldn't be stealing a seat from anyone.
If we knew someone...
I wasn't talking about the press box. If I'm standing there with a microphone and dodgy pair of headphones on me, I will happily walk into Ennis.
Well, I can't go because I have to work. The first round of the Joe McDonough is on at the same time as these, which kind of made me think, could you not... The Joe McDonough is on nearly Saturdays all the way through. I had penciled it in my diary as they're going to be on the Saturday. No, they're going up directly against Clare and Limerick this coming weekend, which is far from ideal. But anyway, we move on. So I'll be working at Laois and Offaly this week as opposed to going in to watch this. But it means I'll have a handle on what happened in that game and you'll know exactly what's happened in Ennis. And I've no doubt my eyes will probably drift over to the laptop to see what's happening while this game is on as well. So new capacity, 21,000. I believe a few extra tickets became available for Walsh Park on Friday just gone as well. So that's now going to be a sellout as well. So two games to start in Munster are sellouts, but the whole country's interested in this. No GAA Go argument this time round. It's on terrestrial TV on RTE this coming Sunday. It's the game everyone wants to watch, Murph. Is there any possibility that while we're building it up, it mightn't be that good?
I think it's going to be a great game. I think either way, sometimes you build up these games and you build it up because it's all tactical. But generally, to be honest, Clare and Limerick is just pure raw emotion. It's very aggressive hurling. We don't come away from it saying with style or things. Often there's individual bits of brilliance. But, the best example of Clare and Limerick over the last few years is, I think it was the Munster final, the first day where it was basically the ball was thrown in. We have about 2 minutes of play where it's just recklessly lads tacked and flicking. The ball barely moves and it's just intensity. I would say there's a very low percentage chance of this being a bad game, because at the end of the day, there's so much kind of on stake. There's a lot of bragging rights. And when bragging rights are on stake or are on the line, people often forego fancy scores or different things. It just literally comes down to a bit of grit. It comes down to lads getting stuck in. And we've seen the atmosphere as well. Obviously, the atmosphere of what the crowd brings to it brings a huge amount. And any time we've seen close games up in Ennis, or any games really in the last few years up in Ennis, it's been just raucous. Clare get a score and the place absolutely erupts. So in terms of a spectacle, I don't think we'll be let down at all. I can't see how it'll be let down. The only way it could be let down is that, and I don't see this happening either, is Limerick suddenly take off and rout Clare and it kills the whole thing. I just don't see that happening. And likewise, I don't see Clare taking off and routing Limerick. So it's just, it's hard to imagine. We're very cautious sometimes not to build these up because we ruin them for ourselves. But I think it's these games, they haven't let us down. They deserve the billing. And I just think, no, whatever is to play out, I don't think any hurling supporter will be let down by what's about to play out.
You get to be there, Skell, as you've already mentioned. You're going to be alongside Tommy Rooney covering this for Off the Ball on Sunday afternoon. And I don't know if it takes on a little bit of an extra dimension. Now the Clare are league champions. We've got now league champions, a team who've got that bit of silverware, up against the reigning, defending, multiple-time Munster and All-Ireland champions, the league champions from last year. These teams have been sharing the vital silverware between them now, and Clare have got themselves on the board. Like, is that extra little bit of spice now as well, the fact that Clare are coming into this in such good form this year?
Yeah, I don't know is reassurance the right word to use, but it's incremental progression for Clare, that they're climbing. So they haven't regressed in any form. So if they went through a terrible league campaign, that'd nearly be disastrous for the start of their championship. But they came through a very good league campaign, won it all, are in probably the height of confidence they've ever been over the last number of years. And part of me looks at Clare and Limerick and says, you know what? It's not just sporting rivalry. It's nearly kind of personal at this stage, if that makes sense, you know? Like that's how kind of intertwined these teams have become over the last, I suppose, 3 years. Really, it's been very, very, very close. And there's like a personal edge to it. And like, if you look at any kind of social media and you look at the interactions between Clare and Limerick fans, it's heavy. It's hot. You know what I mean? It's really hot. Like, so I think that's going to be carried through. That feeds into players. Like, as a player, like if you grew up against a county where there's heavy rivalry at home between done through the years, that nearly kind of seeps into you a small bit and you kind of carry that out the pitch. And you kind of embody your supporters to a degree. And that's, we're now at, I think, at the near the climax of the rivalry between Clare and Limerick. And I agree totally, Murph. I don't see any situation whereby there's a rout on either behalf. And I just hope that whoever the man is in the middle, I don't know who that is as of yet. He hasn't been named. Or do any of you know? I haven't heard it yet, who the referee is.
I haven't seen it yet, no.
He's got a critical job to do, both to maintain control, because you can imagine how, I suppose, hectic that first 10 minutes is going to be. So maintain control. And just can we just avoid controversial decisions of some sort, you know, because there seems to be always be one, whether it be a free or sending off or some sort. Can we just get away from that and please just let them off? let them go and see what happens. But I think the build-up is going to, or sorry, the game is going to equal the build-up. I'm really excited, you know, as you can tell by the way I'm talking, that I think it, you know, it will be the game of the year, you know what I mean? It's going to be hard to kind of emulate something it's such a fierce rivalry that's kind of, I suppose, catapulted over the last couple of years. And so for it to come to a head now on Sunday, I'm looking forward to it. And being there is far better than we know, than watching on television, because you get to feel it. You get to feel the energy, the crowd, the noise, etc. All that is heightened. So I'm really looking forward to it as a neutral.
Decisions, Murph, that have to be made. First of all, for Limerick. So they got Sean Finn and Declan Hannan back out onto the pitch for that league semi-final against Kilkenny. Maybe they didn't quite look match sharp, but they've been away in their warm weather. They've had a bit of in time with the panel to actually be back sharp again. The first two, do you start those two for this game?
I think so. It is a tough, like, it's certainly a tough decision to make. To be honest, I'd say it's a very tough team to pick in the direction that who do you leave out. But I don't really see why you don't start him. Like, in fairness, we've spoken so many times about Declan Hannan and how influential he is. And okay, people will point to the league semi-final and say there's one or two bits there where it's uncharacteristic of Declan Hannan. But players can have those days, and that's absolutely fine. I don't think that any of that underwrites anything he's done previously or, like, you know, overrules that. Sean Finn as well. Sean Finn needs games. He'll love getting games. He's a big game player. He never plays bad in big games. So bringing him into this element, I think it actually benefits the rest of the team in that, you know, it allows you to push other influential defenders. What you've seen Limerick do is, you know, move other players further into the play. Whereas Sean Finn, you throw him in cornerback number two, you know, there's no need to put him anywhere else. But it allows you to push other players further into the play, gives you more options around the middle. Might even mean not starting a fairly influential player, but putting them in 40 minutes into the game, which is another huge thing to be able to do for a team. Mm-hmm. So I think, yeah, in a game like this, where there's a lot on the line, what Declan Hannan would bring to that centre-back position in terms of calmness, in terms of decision-making, in terms of, you know, getting the team into the game and, you know, holding it all together. Absolutely, Declan Hannan is starting. In terms of, look, Sean Finn's coming back from a cruciate injury, comes back, you know, gets in, plays a bit of a game and so on. He'll only benefit from playing more games as well. And at the end of the day, he can't be expected to come back straight away, go into against Kilkenny and just be 100% flying it. You know, he hurled away, had a game, got minutes into the legs. I'm sure we've got a lot more then over the last few weeks. But if I was sitting down as Limerick manager and I had Declan Hannan and Sean Finn at my disposal, I'd be starting them certainly, because they're just, you know, they're the type of players you need in these games. I mean, these lads have went to war so many times for Limerick that they're you can bank on them any day they go out. So especially this game now with Clare, you have to put them in. You have to play your strongest hand.
Does that mean that Kyle Hayes starts, Gail?
Just as Paul was talking, I was trying to write out a team.
No harm.
Christ, it was tricky. It's very tricky. I got kind of coming to now. I suppose it helps me in the sense that I know that Donovan is injured, right? So I've reverted type and I've put Keane Lynch back to midfield and I've put Kyle Hayes in at centre forward. Now, the question is for me is does Kyle Hayes go centre forward or does someone like Cotton O'Neill transfer back up again to his normal position where he occupied some time last year?
Would there not be an argument maybe for putting the complete opposite of that, where you keep Hayes at left wing back and you keep Colin O'Neill in the forwards? I know he's been moving him around during the league.
There's certainly an argument. But then so you've Sean Finn, obviously you've got, I have Casey and Nash in place, and I have Dan Morrissey as well. You know, I've Declan Hannan and Jeremy Burns. So which one of those loses out? If there was a situation before where Casey went out and Morrissey came back into fullback, but that was a stopgap at the time due to Casey's injury. Now that they're both fit, I can't see that happening. I think Casey occupies the fullback role.
So Morrissey play wing back.
Yeah, I think. Like, I suppose when you go back to the situation last year where Declan Hannan was injured, we were all making assumptions here on who would be at six. And I don't think, put it this way, not a lot of people put Willard on who at six. Yeah. And ultimately, that's where he landed up. So, like, John Kelly is not devoid of putting in, you know, a bit of a bolter, which I'm a fan of myself putting a few bolters here. But if you remember when everyone was fit, back not last year's Ireland final, the year previous, when they played Kilkenny as well, Kyle Hayes pitched up as centre forward and himself and Hegarty caused riots, you know, that day in the Ireland final against Kilkenny. So, when that kind of personnel is available again, I think we'll see probably a transition back up the field. Because they don't miss a beat. Like, what do they miss by moving these people around? If you put Hayes back at wing back and put O'Neill, either or, it doesn't make a difference. They don't miss a beat. I think you need to, especially with the opposition they're up against, I think they need to go heavy, hard and fast with the best personnel they have. And I think if Kyle Hayes is fit and ready and available to play, he has to play. It's that simple.
Yeah. Look, again, if you put those two boys together in that half forward line, if you suggested with, say, Hayes and Garrod Hegarty there, you potentially then put a bit of pressure back on to Ryan and Condon, who want to do a lot of hurling for Clare out of their half back line as well. And that becomes one hell of an interesting battle if they're all kind of bouncing off each other during it too. Like, do you start Hayes, Murph? I mean, look, he's coming back in after his legal issues, played against Dublin and Croke Park, then we didn't see him again in the league. Had the ankle injury, so I don't know where he is, to use Skell's caveat of if he's fully fit here. So I'm not sure if he is fully fit. But if we're to assume that Hayes is fit and available, is he straight in the team?
Yeah, if he's fit and available, I think he's straight into the team. It's always the old quandary of where if a player's come back in, you're not certain of his fitness. Not in terms of like he's 100%, but will he last if we were
maybe,
to put him in?
Maybe the Clare game is not the time to try that.
Well, not that maybe the Clare game isn't the time to try it. Like, first of all, it comes down to a question, yes or no, is he fit or not? And the physios will call that in the strength and conditioning staff and say yes or no. Like, I mean, if they say he's 95%, well, he's not fit then. That's a simple question. So basically, John Kiley will ask the question, is he fit? And his backroom team will tell him yes or no. And he'll do a fitness test or whatever. Maybe he's done it and maybe he already knows he's fit or not. Let's say the answer is yes. Yes, he's fit. But the other question is then is, will he last the 70 minutes or do you need him to last the 70 minutes? Well, something we don't know anytime any player comes back from an injury is that do they have the 70 minutes in the tank? Well, we want him to play. Don't bring him off the bench, because if he only actually has 10 minutes and you find that out by bringing him off the bench, you're effect. Whereas if you actually just start him, get him in there, turns out he has a good 40 minutes in him. Brilliant. But I think for the likes of Kyle Hayes, some players react great coming off the bench. Some players start better. I think Kyle Hayes probably just starts better. I think that's where he's comfortable with. You put him into the game. I think there's also an element here, and I don't for a second think that Clare that they would see the team sheet of Limerick and their legs would be shaking looking at them. But nevertheless, if you look at down through those names and you see no weaknesses, like that'll be a strength that we're playing to Limerick's hands as well. And if Kyle Hayes is there, and if Kyle Hayes is, as we said, fit and he's able to play, he has to start, because he's one of those players similar to Grow Hegarty, let's say, where yes, there's been days where they've been a little bit off the boil, but when they're on form, they alone can go and win the match, you know. So, and I think for, especially with the likes of Jared Donovan not being there, having Kyle Hayes there, albeit that they're not the same type of player, the physicality that Kyle Hayes brings, the ability when he gets on the ball, let's say, flip it over to the other side, like Clare, like David Fitzgerald, when he runs at defenders, mayhem, you know, as in he mightn't go and get a score, but it suddenly turns and puts the opposition on the back foot that allows players to run off it. And if I'm Limerick, I'd be saying, right, I wouldn't start Hayes in the backs, because I actually just think they have too many established backs. Limerick, not too many, but they have so many great established backs that'll do a job for you. I would think you have him in a position like half forward where he comes out, and let's say he starts centre forward and he John Conlon out for a bit of a run, but picks up the ball then, similar to David Fitzgerald, where he's running at the goal. Well, now you have a bit of a problem. You're asking questions of Clare, whereby try and ask John Conlon or drag John Conlon out of that position, but then run at him then when he's out of that position and see does it create a hole in that number six area, which every team wants to do. And I think that's where Kyle Hayes can bring something to this team. Similarly, I wouldn't find it completely alien to start him at midfield. You know, we're talking maybe having Keane Lynch centre forward. Keane Lynch is the link man for that Limerick team. So start him there and let players feed off him, and maybe have Kyle Hayes starting at number 8 or 9, but sitting towards a half back line. And similarly enough, then you basically have him in a similar launching pad from being a half back, and he can just run at Clare again. So I would think, yeah, look, if he's fit, he starts. And even if there's a question over can he last the 70 minutes, we'll start him. Don't bring him on, because you bring him on in the 40th minute and he lasts 10 minutes, you take him off, you've wasted a stub, and you might have killed a bit of momentum for yourself. So just bring him in, get him going, and see how he gets on.
I have a question for you, Murph.
Okay.
If I was to put you into John Collins' shoes and put you into six for that Clare team, who would you least like to go up against?
If I was in six?
Would it be Hayes, Lynch or Cathal O'Neill?
I would least like to be against Keane Lynch, because...
Would you?
Yeah. From I put that now, no insult to the rest of them, but from kind of a hurling IQ point of view, like... If you ever, I put Keane Lynch in the same way as like a kind of a like, let's say another sports, like Lionel Messi type player or whatever. Or if you want to say it to like a kind of a, if you compare it to hurling or anything, like Patrick Corgan or I'd even say, let's say Richie Hogan or someone like this, where he's constantly scanning around him to see where everybody is and where is he? Do I have the space? Do I have the space? He's looking, and he creates the space and links up other players. So you kind of naturally, as a defender, you're kind of going, I can't give him that yard. Where maybe with Cathal O'Neill, you could say, maybe I can give him that yard, because Cathal O'Neill's strengths are different. Cathal O'Neill is a big physical player, loads of skill. But Keane Lynch always just finds the space. He's such a knacky player that yard, he has the flicks, he has the touches, that I would be kind of going, I might have to sacrifice a bit of my game more here to mark Keane Lynch than to mark other players. And similarly, let's say I put Kyle Hayes in that. Kyle Hayes is going to physically rough you up a bit more in terms of, you know, if you're trying to get in around him, it's going to be tough, whereas Keane Lynch mightn't do that. But when it comes to the actual play, you'd be a little bit more cautious of taking your eye off Keane Lynch. So I would say that's Keane Lynch might drag John Conlon that small bit more.
Skell, if you're, let's flip this around now, and you're the Clare management and you're getting ready for this and you're Brian Lowen, you see how Shane O'Donnell did when he came in at half time, and he looked sharp and he gave Hugh Lawler plenty of problems. Do you start him?
I think that goes without saying. There's a couple of people in that Clare team that if they were off for a while with injury layoffs or
studies. I presume we rule out the fact that Tony Kelly has had no minutes whatsoever. He can't start.
Well, I don't think he's available. I know he's doing a lot of rehab in the last couple of weeks and was getting up the levels, but I don't know. I haven't heard any report that he's actually 100% ready to go.
No, I don't think he is. And that's the thing. I don't think you'd risk him at this stage, would you? Because like, he's no minutes in the legs.
Well, if he's 100% ready to go, you know, and then he's got a couple of weeks at 100%, that's a different story entirely. But if he's only coming to like 90% heading into the Limerick game, I don't play him. You know, I don't risk your whole championship year on the basis of one game. So it's as we see with Shane Donnell, he's had minutes. He's 100% ready to go. he's now had, let's say, you would presume a month or so of training. So he's too good to be on the bench. You know, I know he'd be some influence to come off the bench, but in terms of Clare and what they're about, like he's pivotal to that. He plays well every day. He's one of those guys that we put in the David Fitzgerald bracket also, that every day Clare play, whether they play good or bad, those guys always play well, and they're extremely, extremely effective. And I put Shane Donnellan kind of similar into the Keane, not similar, but he requires the same attention. Excuse me, Keane Lynch requires huge attention. He requires huge personal attention with one guy. You can't play his own against him because he'll crucify you. You have to play man on man with him. And the same thing for Shane Donnellan with me. And he's extremely effective. So whoever who occupies him is going to have to go with him all day, wherever he goes, and nullify his presence. So if you're in Brian Lawson's shoes, I don't think there's any doubt Shane Donnellan starts 100%.
Okay. We could get caught in the weeds around this game too far if we end up going down to every single selection.
Who else is playing in the main one?
Exactly. Yeah. Who would you have on the bench? Who's your fifth sub? Instead of going down that line, let's just get a verdict from both of you. Who's going to win, Murph?
I'm glad you started with him, Will.
Draws are available, by the way. Result.
The temptation is obviously there to go for a draw, because that's the only thing that would be a bit of an anticlimax to it. A temptation is to go for a draw. Like, I am leaning towards Clare at the moment, genuinely. And it's a remarkable thing to say without Tony Kelly, that you could have a Clare go and beat in Limerick. But you have to give respect to Clare on their form at the moment. You know, the last we saw of Limerick, they had a not impressive game against Kilkenny. The one team that can park that, I do believe, is Limerick. And I do believe they're going to come with savage aggression. But, you know, we have grounds to believe that Clare can go and beat them. And, you know, we saw it last year in Championship. So I don't want to... The draw is the easy one to go to. And I don't want to go and just pick a draw.
The fence is very comfortable, by the way. But
it's a great place. Yeah, I've never went for a draw before, so I might break it out for this one. But, like, the thing is, the fact that I'm staring into the distance at an inanimate object in my kitchen going, who is going to win this game?
Are there answers coming back from that lampshade that you're looking up at, no?
It's actually a handle of a press I'm looking at at the moment. And it's looking at me going, you're on your own here, bud.
Can I give you some information, Murph, before you make a decision?
Go on. Absolutely. Right.
2022 group game, draw.
Yeah.
2022 final, draw after extra time, then 11, didn't approach, it went 20 kills headline. 2023 yeah. Clare group game plus one. 2023 Limerick final plus one. So the margin has been no more than a point. So now make your decision.
That was information, but it wasn't informative. Like, it's not going to inform my decision. Right, this is where I am. I don't want to say a draw. I want to try and I believe someone's going to win it. At risking the rat of the Clash of the Ash pod, I'll go for Clare in this one.
By how much?
Oh, pint. Jesus Christ.
So the information I gave me was important.
Debating a draw. I'm hardly going to go Clare by six.
I'm more than happy to be a coward. I think it's going to be a draw. Scout.
Jesus Christ.
I'm actually thinking of reversing.
Too late now.
I just want to be right. That's literally, I don't care actually who wins, but I just want to be right.
Well, on off the balls, who you got this week, I've scored zero. I believe across the board, okay. Seven people predicting, one person got 1 point all weekend. You get 1 point for a correct result and 3 points for a correct score. 1 point has been scored across the 21 predictions that were made. So, or 28 predictions that were made even.
My logic here, lads, right, is I'm putting value on the venue.
It's fine.
Okay.
So I'm putting value on the venue. So I'm putting a plus one on the venue, right?
As long as this doesn't go, I'm going plus one on the venue, Limerick by 15.
No, no, I'm not. I'm putting plus one on the venue, right? Jesus Christ.
See, you know what? While you were thinking there, Skettle, this is what's going to happen here now. Like, I'm picturing it already. Like, nobody, unless you listen to the pod or watch it, people aren't going to see that, how hard we're thinking about this and going, oh God, we're in turmoil here. And Off the Ball will fuck out a headline saying Clare to beat Limerick by.
Yeah, yeah. Oh no.
And ruin us.
This is the three fucking nobodies didn't care. They just threw a dice and went, oh yeah, five will be the difference between them.
And Clash of the Ash will be going through their meme archive going, right, I need to destroy these lads. Oh God.
I can formulate arguments
for
both, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Both. I'm going to say Limerick have this fucking siege mentality. The drive for five. Everyone's against us.
You leaned hard one direction that you were going venue plus one, Limerick.
I did, yeah. I went venue hard plus left. One. What's that I give it? I give it plus one.
Okay. That's fair. I'm actually happy that someone else is going in another direction. That's
yeah, but I'm going to go Limerick plus one now. I'm going Limerick to win by one.
Okay.
So we have 3 points spread across the three of us. That's essentially where we're at the moment. So
one of us is going to be right, which is fantastic.
Well, I was right about the league final. You were both wrong. So we can move on from that.
I can presume the odds here are 65, by the way, are they?
Have to be. I haven't checked.
Limerick probably 5-6, Clare 6-5. I haven't checked.
It has to be a coin toss. There's no way unless you got the spread is one between now and the weekend, unless there's some kind of injury news or something that's come out. You can check it. You can check it while we think. But at the moment,
may I say my Paddy Power account is empty after yesterday. We had a bad day.
All right. Yeah, the feeling Flooring Porter may well have had a few quid on him along the way. Right.
Oh, did he? He didn't win, did he not?
No.
We move on, Paul. Okay.
Anyway.
Oh, but God, Limerick minus two is odds on. Jeez Louise. Limerick minus two is 5-6. Clare plus two is 11-10. I would get on that.
That's very tempting. Yep.
More if I get on that, I'll tell you.
No, I was just laughing at the gamble.
I'm going to get on right now. I'm going to put the ton on Limerick plus or Clare plus two.
So whatever was left from Florin Porter.
So if Clare go plus two, a Limerick win by one, I'm still not too bad.
Your ego is hurt, but your bank account isn't.
Yeah. Not like following up a loss with another bad bet. That's what I would always say on this one. So
Why is it a bad bet?
I know, it looks like reasonable odds to me, but I feel like you've made an incredibly impulsive decision in the middle of a podcast. Yeah. Going, well, I think I'll just throw a ton on that.
Yeah, sorry, you just backed Clare, did you?
Yeah, but I backed him plus two.
Oh yeah, sorry, correct. Okay. Good.
So if my prediction comes through, like Limerick minus one, Limerick to win by one, I'm still all right. Like. I have two victories.
I just on paper, technically there, if you leave out the plus two, where it's like, you go, who do you think is going to win? I think Limerick are going to win. And then 5 seconds later, you back Clare 100 euro. It's like, what?
Well, either Tommy, and Tommy Rooney, this is, by the way, is either getting steak at the weekend on the way home, or he's getting a happy meal. One or the other. Right, I promise we won't spend as much detail on the other game, so I do want to bounce around what else is happening this weekend. We talked about Waterford in the very disappointing campaign they've had, Murph.
Mm-hmm.
Is there an argument to say they get one over on Cork in Welsh Park, and next thing we have to change our view entirely about Davy Fitzgerald's team, or what's happening in that game?
I don't think so. It's not to be the coward's way out by saying never say never, but like, I mean, there's potential in these games, and we saw in this fixture 2 years ago where Cork unravelled Waterford, and Waterford were going in as favourites in the same venue. But I just don't see it at the moment. You know, Cork finished the league, you know, strongish, even though, okay, they didn't qualify for a semi-final, but they finished. And even throughout, when Cork were, let's say, even the games that they didn't win at the start of the league, they were still showing, like, you know, exactly where they can hurt teams and what they're capable of. So I think Cork are happy enough now starting off this game going, or starting off this championship saying, look, well, all the attention is going to be on Clare and Limerick this week. We get to go down, we'll play Waterford. Being honest, they should go and beat them. You know, they know that. They should go and beat Waterford. And I think that's something Cork need to practice as well. When their favourites going out, beating teams, and taking ownership of that and just, you know, taking charge of the games that they control. So I think it's very hard to see where Waterford are going to pull this from. Again, from the start of the pod where you had asked, is it enough time for teams to turn around? I don't think so. Where did Waterford leave off the league? They left off the league in, you know, not a great position. There's not many parts you can point to the league where you can say, well, if Waterford just work on that, well, they'll get everything in order. I just don't see, and I think Cork will smell blood. The only fault here is that if Cork go to, which we've seen them do previously, where they go in with the tag of favourites and they don't show up, they leave a team in the game, it becomes cagey, and who knows after that? That's a risk for Cork. But I don't see it happening here. I think I think Cork could potentially win this by 10 or 12 points, to be honest. I think if they get their backs up, we've saw Alan Connolly, you know, shooting the lights out. We've seen, you know, Declan Dalton, these boys, what they can do. And, you know, we've seen Cork in positions that when they do get their backs up and there's belief in them, that they can go hard at them. So I do think, it's a big call now, could have egg in my face next week, but I do see something like that happen, a bit of momentum going and Cork winning this game by close to 10 points.
Okay. Shane Kingston missing for Cork. He confirmed at an event with Ayr last week. I think he's hoping to be back for round two when they play against Clare. For you, Skell, no argument for Waterford turning this round here for week one?
It's hard to give an argument, to be honest. Like, I was just thinking when, as Paul was talking again, like this, I cast my mind back to when John Kiley took over Limerick with Paul Finnerick and the players he had and how long it took him to get Limerick into a you know, a position of real quality, you know, and that took a couple of years too, albeit 18. So I'm looking at the Waterford situation and going, no, there was no evidence from the league to say that there was a grander plan here. They didn't produce anything in any of the games, to be honest, right, that showed a kind of a steady pattern, like there were building blocks, if you know what I mean. It just seemed very erratic for me, where they had patches of play that they produced some good hurling, but then predominantly it was poor, really poor. So when you put that together over the whole course of the league campaign, I just don't see the evidence, right?
Yeah.
Now, to say Cork to win by 10 points, if it was in Páirc Uí Chaoimh now where there was more space and a larger arena, I'd say, yeah, definitely the possibility. Walsh Park is slightly different for me. I do think Cork are going to win it. I think they win by probably 4 or 5. I can't see how Waterford are going to stop the Cork attack. And there's just Cork have just quality all over. And then what they have as well is they have quality and pace mixed together. So they have this kind of unique ability, let's say, from position 5 up the way that they can, if there's a turnover, which there will be, but it's not out attack. You know, it's not all out transfer up. And I just don't see how Waterford can handle that pace and skill from Cork in tandem. Flip the coin, and I just don't see that Waterford doing that to Cork the other way around. I just don't think they're going to win directly. So they're going to have to run through them. And I just don't think they have the athletic ability for it. Mixed with the game plan. So I'm going to have to say Cork by about, I'm going to go 5.
Okay. Two things I want to touch on Leinster. We'll talk about Leinster in a bit more detail in the members pod, I promise. But there are two things I definitely want to touch on. Wexford Dublin is probably the third most important game of the weekend, but it's less important than the fact that we know that Johnny Glynn is on the Galway panel for the game against Carlow at Pearse Stadium. I kept my counsel when a friend of mine bumped into Johnny Glynn at the warm weather training camp. And he sent me a picture and he went, look, Johnny Glynn's there. And I was like, look, I'm not saying this unless we have confirmation. Then we got confirmation when the New York Football Management said, he's back over playing hurling with Galway. So we know he's here. We know he's going to play. And then everyone was looking at Garnacho, liking some tweets at the weekend about Eric Ten Hag as some kind of confirmation bias. And then a member of the Galway hurling team liked a meme joke that I made about Greg Norman being asked a question about Johnny Glynn. And that's all the evidence I needed, Skell. He's playing against Carlow this weekend.
Oh, I'd say he could feature. I won't lie, I'd say he could feature. And the minute you said Johnny Glynn back ago, a song comes to my mind. You know that song, Here Comes the Boom? That's it now. Here comes the boom. The big man is back. So just long to Johnny. Everybody else spread out. Simple as that. Everybody else just out. Long to Johnny. Now, I don't think he'll start, Les, obviously. I think he'll see him for a feature.
I think you have to play him a bit, though. Because this is Carlo. Kilkenny are on the horizon. If you do see him as legitimately having a role against Kilkenny, you got to get minutes into him.
This is the wiggle room you mentioned at the start of the pod, you know, whereby you have the allowance to get him in at halftime. Or you have the allowance to even start him and get a heavy 45 minutes into him. You know, that's what you kind of afford in this game. And like, no disrespect to Carlo, but we're going to win this by a good margin. So like, you can afford to try personnel who are just tinkering on the side of the 15, and also people maybe come back from injuries, you have to get some game time. You have the affordance to do that. Because I don't think, look, score difference may come down to it, but I don't think it's going to come down to it heavily in this group. So it's like, try what you want, get ready for the next one, because the next one is where chickens are going to get fried by. It's a random one.
Is that a phrase?
I don't know. I just made it up as I went along.
Chickens are going to get fried.
Sounds like it should be a tagline for a company that exclusively makes chicken of a certain fried variety, which we're not going to give a free plug to. But, scoring difference is going to come into this unless the draws. I think it's unlikely we're going to see too many draws here in Leinster. Well, that could happen in Munster. So Galway to win handsomely and Glynn to get time into the legs. Okay, that answers the Johnny Glynn question. There's no more hiding it. Oh, is he back? Is he not back? Whatever. He's here, baby, and he's ready to go. Wexford Dublin, though, Murph. This is big. I would say this is probably the second or third biggest game of the weekend, because last few years, generally, this has been very important in determining who qualifies behind Kilkenny and Galway. These are the two teams, I think, competing for one spot. And Wexford Park could well decide quite a bit of it at the weekend.
It could, yeah. And to be honest, if, regardless of Wexford Park, I think if this was in Parnell Park or Crow Park, you'd have to still favour Wexford going into this. Look, they've turned over a good leaf this year, coming off the back of last year. They found a bit of form. You know, they had a good league. I think what they did in the league, if you gave it to any Wexford supporter after last year, they said, yep, that's no problem at all. We'll absolutely take that. We'll have a few good performances. We'll draw with Clare. Okay, they'll be disappointed with the Offaly game. Drawn with Kilkenny, like, yep, we'll take all those. So, you know, Wexford have shown a nice few bits about their play. You know, they seem to have bought into what Keith Rossiter is doing. And when you flip it across to Dublin, then, you know, Dublin again, just hard to see where they're going to muster big wins this year, which again is what we're going to be asking the teams. I just can't see where it's going to come from. Play has been quite erratic. You know, when we saw them against Limerick, completely absent of any sort of pressure, any sort of commitment, everything, you know. So, granted, you know, Wexford and Limerick obviously aren't the same teams, but I just think, like you said, Wexford will see this game and go, okay, this will decide a lot. We're in Wexford Park here. Let's go out and win. Let's start off the championship on a good note and let's get out of Leinster. And, you know, that'd be brilliant for, you know, particularly the younger players of that panel who may have not experienced some of the success of the older lads who have actually won Leinster finals and things. So I just think with this one, I do think Dublin are well capable of going there as they have in the past and giving Wexford enough of it. But I don't see Dublin coming into the game in that position to actually give them enough that. But nevertheless, I would only say, you know, maybe Wexford winning by 3 or 4. I don't see Wexford completely going to town on Dublin here. I just see them having enough. But, you know, hopefully it'll be a good game. I'd like to see Dublin bring something to it, but I just don't see any major shocks in this one.
All I can hear is "here comes the boom" in my head at the moment, by the way. Thanks for that, Skell.
Well, a little boom there is Colm Lyons, referee for Kerry Limerick, just announced.
Right, okay.
Just announced, okay.
Yeah.
Interesting. The right call, good call. You guys are getting nothing but slag for having a goal.
The last time he was refing, he was the ref to St. Off Hegarty. Is that right? For the sideline and for the incident with your man.
He sent me off before, so he sends off all the good lads by all accounts. So, Stephen Hegarty.
Or the riffraff.
Well, what did he send you off for?
I was a bad call.
Fouling. Definitely professional fouling.
No. It was against Galway. I fouled Jason Flynn. The two other boys were daydreaming, and Jason Flynn broke through. Wasn't my man, took one for the team.
Right.
Took one for the team. It was Martin Conor Whelan. Conor Whelan wasn't being sound, and he was going, "This fella's in a yellow card. Let's just absolutely run at him." So, it was going grand. But Colm Lyons warned me about 10 minutes later. And I actually hadn't done anything, but he warned me. Conor Whelan got a goal. And he kind of just went, he got past me. But I didn't try and deliberately foul him. But Colm Lyons said, "Be careful." And I said, "I didn't do anything. Like, I mean, if I fouled him, you can tell me to be careful." And then the second half, Davy Burke flicked the ball over my head. I was stationary. Ball moved out. Davy Burke flicked it over my head and ran into me. Sure, I was going.
Awful tackle. Awful tackle.
It was shocked. I didn't do anything.
Straight red. Should have been.
I think he came running over in the second year. I was like, "You're nuts." Like, I was standing there. Like, what did I do? Sent me off. So it wasn't even like I did a haymaker to a fella, like, in fairness. So
was that league game?
No, I think it was round robin. I think it was round robin in Nolan Park, yeah.
Was it?
Yeah, I think so. I believe so, yeah. Because I remember it being a sunny day. Oh, Jesus. Was it?
Is that 19?
Maybe 17, 18, 19, sometime around then.
We can fact check that for next week. But I'm going to put a gold star onto scale here at the moment. Ennis 2022, Garrod Hegarty sent off by Colm Lyons.
Jesus, that's good.
Photo there of John Kiley having a cordial conversation with them as they come off the field in Ennis on the story.
But you know what gets me every time? I know he got booked for the sideline for taking one quick. He hit into a fella. But he got booked for tackling another fella. Is he Aaron something? I can never remember your man's name. He had a tattoo in his arm as a sleeve. Is that Fitzgerald?
Fitzgerald, I had in my head, yeah.
He's a Fitzgerald. Is it Aaron Fitzgerald?
I think he could be right.
I can never remember that.
Yeah.
That's the one thing that catches me with that incident. Anyways, moving on.
Sorry. There you go. Well remembered. That's what happened, 2022. Moving on, Skell, who's winning between Wexford and Dublin?
I think it's a Wexford situation, yeah. Again, the venue counts for a lot. This time of year, the way the weather is, lads, you know yourself, it could be a breezy one. And they seem to have Wexford always seem to have, let's say, down to a tee and how to play at home with and against the breeze. Dublin, I just don't think have the clientele, to be honest, list. I just don't think they have the clientele to make a serious push in Leinster. And with the way the Wexford are, a new management, and with the new management comes a new energy. Sometimes they say a change is as good as a break. And that's not to draw any disrespect to Derek Egan for the job he did, you know, but ultimately what Wexford have now is one of their own in position who's established kind of this, I would say, I hate to use the word pride, but, like, you know, that's kind of the way you sense energy when they play. So it's all kind of stacks up when you add the venue and the personnel they're after with Serpent. And then it comes down to the injury list. They had a long injury list in the second last league game and the last league game. So it's if a lot of those people become available again and they have close to their full 15, it's a Wexford victory. Now, if they don't, that's a different kettle of fish. But ultimately, if you were to say Wexford have a full 15 ready to go, it's in by 5 or 6.
I presume we take it as well that if whoever wins this, I should say, are going to be in a hugely prime position to qualify this time. I know Wexford seem to have some kind of Indian sign over Kilkenny at the moment, so even if Wexford were to lose to Dublin, maybe they get a result against Kilkenny. But in all likelihood, if games go out if the way they're expected to go, whoever loses this is behind the eight ball to qualify, aren't they?
Yeah,
pretty much, yeah.
So there we go. I think we're going Wexford across the board. I don't see any reason to argue against Wexford beating Dublin this weekend. So they're the games to look forward to. I'll give you just a quick full rundown of what the fixtures are for this weekend then on the first round of championship. So on Sunday in Munster, you've got Clare against Limerick. In Ennis, you've got Waterford against Cork at Welsh Park. In Leinster, there are three games: Kilkenny against Antrim at Nolan Park, Galway versus Carlow, and you've got Wexford against Dublin. It's also the opening round of the Joe McDonagh Cup as well. And we had the games that took place in the weekend just gone by, so I'll give you the results of those before we finish. In the Christy Ring, in the games that were played on Sunday, Derry won on the road against Wicklow, 17 points to 12. Good win for London against Tyrone in Dungannon, 223 to 2 goals and 12. In the Nicky Rackard, Mayo opened up with a big win at McHale Park against Monaghan, 424 to 28. The Christy Ring on Saturday, Kildare, who had a league campaign to forget about, winning on the road against Sligo at Markovic Park, 219 to 2 goals and 8. In the Nicky Rackard, we had Donegal 22 points, Armagh 112, and Roscommon winning at the Hyde against Louth by 120 to 114. And we had three games in the Laurie Mara Cup across the weekend as well, where it was Longford 222, Lancashire 10 points, Fermanagh winning on the road against Leitrim by 19 points to 19, and it was Cavan 122, Warwickshire 213. So they're the results from the opening weekend. We'll look into Leinster in a little bit more detail in the members pod as well, which will be out on Tuesday morning, offtheball.com/join if you want to become a member. But for now, James Gale, thanks a million.
You're welcome. Thanks.
Paul Murphy, it's been a pleasure. You can go as long or short as you want compared to Gale there thinking about his answer.
No, thanks very much.
Great stuff. The boys will be back next week to break down the first week of championship. Speak to you then.
OTB's The Hurling Pod
with Bord Gáis Energy, proud sponsors of the Senior Hurling Championship.